Part 2. Dark Tidings. Meanwhile, high up in Castle Rufo Rufo, the townsfolk asked for an audience with the king, for there was trouble brewing on the island. The castle was a magnificent bastion of stone. It towered above the village of Scaletta Zanclea, which overlooked the Strait of Messina and the kicking toe of mainland Italy that lay across it. High up on the castle ramparts, a gatekeeper peered down to see what all the fuss was about.
Who goes there?
I wish to speak to the king.
Aspetta un attimo, ti apro.
The king was a very self-satisfied fellow, and he had the gut to go with it. He arched his eyebrows and wore a well-rehearsed smile on his bearded face. He sat on his throne in the very center of a great hall, at the height of a series of steps that few people were ever allowed to climb, and certainly not commoners. Beside the king stood his daughter, the princess. Kind-hearted and wise beyond her years, the princess was eager to lead her people through strength and compassion. On the opposite side of the king stood the handsomest, smartest, most charming, most sensational poet and courtier there ever was. Me, Jacopo Mastacci. My falcon was also there, of course, and often had a thing or two to say about the court's proceedings. She flapped her wings while I stood ready to advise His Majesty and explain to him plainly the situation in his kingdom. He wanted me there, for he claimed he didn't have an ear for his people's rugged dialect, which is of course ridiculous. But this time, the pleas of his people were stranger than usual, and it was no easy task to understand what was going on. At last, the first beggar shuffled before the king and his attendees.
Speak.
Altezza.
You'll have to speak up. We can't hear you all the way down there.
Altezza, your majesty, last night an entire fleet of ships flew into the sky.
Ah, did they now?
Yes, your highness, I saw it with my own eyes.
Oh, you poor fool. That is impossible.
Please, your majesty, if I may, my nonna told tales of such sights when I was a boy. Many believe that the Fata Morgana is not just a trick of the eye, but is an evil witch that haunts the Strait of Messina. Many believe she sits beneath the sea, even now, toying with the lives of sailors, seizing their reflections. Ships would sail into the sky, dumping their cargo and all the poor souls aboard into the depths.
Are you quite finished? I've had my fill of your old wives' tale.
It was the Fata Morgana, your grace. I know it in my bones.
I forbid you to utter that ridiculous name in my kingdom. Now leave before I have you thrown out.
The beggar left with his head held low. The princess had more questions, but she held her tongue out of respect. Her father was the monarch, after all. The king fluffed his cushion and adjusted his crown before he beckoned again.
Next.
A captain entered the great hall this time, and he carried with him a helm, a ship's steering wheel. He knelt at the foot of the stairs.
Your Majesty, Altezza, all of my men are dead.
And how did that come to pass?
The sirens.
The sirens?
Yes, Altezza.
Go on.
It's been a week since I stood with my crew on the deck of my ship. The wind was with us. The sun warmed our backs as we sang. Then we heard a different song. My men and I knew what was afoot, I tried to change course, to steer away from the melody of the creatures that hunted us and the foul sea they brought with them. But their song had been sung, and its hooks were deep. One by one, my friends disappeared. No matter how loudly I screamed their names, I only caught glimpses of the things as they slithered away with my men, one by one, until I was alone. And my ship had been dashed to pieces. My helm and I were all that washed ashore. Now I kneel before you as captain of no one and nothing.
And you live to tell the tale, it would seem.
Yes, Your Grace.
And what a tall tale it was. The sole survivor, as it were. Very spooky indeed. How do you explain it?
Explain what?
Why were you spared? It seems very convenient.
An old trick. I quickly stuffed my ears with wax. One of Homer's lessons.
Homer? What on earth is he saying, Jacopo?
Homer, Your Grace. One of ancient Greece's great poets. Ulysses poured wax into his crew's ears so that they...
How quaint.
The king helped himself to some grapes. He tossed one into the air to catch it in his mouth, and missed. He chewed on a second more successfully while he considered the tidings of the captain.
What say you, my lord?
I say it was a jolly good show. But you'll have to do better next time.
What? Your Grace?
I don't have time to indulge in sailor superstition.
Please, Alte, it's true.
Guards, take him away.
It's true! Unhand me! My king, I know what I saw.
Enough of this. Guards...
It's true! It's true, I tell you! Your Highness, Princess!
Well, that one certainly has a vivid imagination.
Padre, Maestà, surely this man cannot be lying.
Don't be so quick to dole out the benefit of the doubt, my dear. Sailors are famously fond of the bottle, after all. Speaking of which... Servant? More wine?
Padre, father, with respect, there are too many coincidences, too many strange things happening at sea, too many hardships.
Daughter, you must grow a thicker skin if you wish to rule one day. Do not strain yourself trying to understand these poor people. Now be silent and watch your father work. Il prossimo. Next.
A woman knelt before the king and placed a sizzling net at the foot of the stairs.
What is this?
The sea is burning, and the fish burn with it.
With some effort, the king rose from his throne and descended the steps to investigate the net. Indeed, the fish within it smoldered. The foul odor made my nostrils sting and my falcon flee. The king drank from his goblet and stooped to pick up the netting with his heavily ringed fingers. It sizzled in his hands like hot coals.
Ooh!
He recoiled, dropped the net, and sucked on his burnt fingers like a child.
What kind of game are you playing at? Am I supposed to guess how you created this deception? How amusing. My court is in sore need of magicians.
It is not a game, Your Majesty. Altezza, the sea is boiling and the fish are floating dead and burned by the hundreds.
How very disappointing. Do you think I am a fool?
No, Your Majesty. Please understand.
Oh, I understand perfectly. My subjects seek to make a mockery of my court. My time is valuable, and you are wasting it with your tricks.
This is not a trick, Your Majesty. Please!
I have no time for liars. Take her away.
Liar? Who's the liar here? You're supposed to lead, to be an example.
I said take her away.
You're just a fool in a crown.
I will not tolerate such impertinence.
She's clearly mad.
I will not say it again.
The beggar, like the one before her, glared as the guards removed her, and the king retreated to the comfort of his perch.
What a nasty woman.
Father, I do not like this. How many stories must we listen to before we take action? We should find out more from our people before dismissing them so cruelly.
Cruelly? Oh, daughter, you wound me. I thought you were smarter than to believe in fairy tales. These rustics are only looking for a handout. Burning sea. Sirens. What nonsense. Next.
Messina persevered despite the stories, despite the disasters, and despite the king's negligence. Life went on. Seasons came and went. The princess learned the ways of ruling a kingdom. I, Jacopo Mastacci, continued to serve the king with my falcon by my side. And Nicola, well, Nicola was growing up. He still wore the same coppola he did as a boy, and still carried his father's knife with him wherever he went. The title of the man of the family and all the duties that came with it would one day fall to Nicola, but he knew he could never be a fisherman like his father, for he considered every fish a friend, and he wasn't about to make a meal of his friends now, was he? While his father lamented his son's choice at first, he came to accept and even celebrate Nicola's love for the water. The Reis delighted in hearing stories about his son from his fellow fishermen. Cola loved his father, and because he felt that he should help put food on the family table, he left for the port of Messina every day for work, doing odd jobs for the dock workers and sailors in exchange for a few coins so that he might fill his family's pantry. He was particularly skilled at retrieving lost cargo, dislodging anchors, and scrubbing barnacles from the hulls of ships in the port. But to be honest, he spent most of his time swimming with the fish. He could not speak their language, but little by little, he almost felt as though he could understand them. Every so often, he would attempt to eavesdrop on their latest gossip. The small yellow fish he saved as a boy was not so little anymore, and it floated like a plump golden balloon.
Hello, my yellow fellow. Staying out of trouble? Oh, what shall I call you? How about Lumiuni? Do you know what that means? It's Sicilian for lemon. Bright, round, full of life. Just like you.
Lumiuni seemed to quite like that name. He and Cola became the very best of friends. They touched noses in greetings and farewells, and basked in the sunshine and danced together almost every day. One day, Cola was swimming near the docks to catch up with passersby on their way to market, showing off how long he could hold his breath.
Oh, buongiorno, Cola!
Buongiorno, signora!
How is the sea today?
She's warm and calm. A beautiful day to swim.
Aha, how nice! I have not swum in the sea since I was a little girl, but my husband Pietro, he used to love to swim, rest his soul. Hard to believe it's been so many years. You weren't even born yet. He would have loved to swim with you. Ah, I'm well. Enjoy yourself, Cola.
Grazie, signora.
Aiuto! Help! Help!
What happened, signora?
My ring! My ring!
Your ring?
Sì! My wedding ring! It fell into the water!
Don't worry, signora. Torno subito.
Nicola knew this underwater neighborhood well, and waved to the fish as he passed them. The port was murky, but out of the corner of his eye he caught a small glimmer of gold. There was the signora's ring, wedged between the claws of a curious crab. The crustacean seemed ready to crush it when... Startled by Lumiuni's flurry of flips, the crab dropped the ring, and in an instant, Cola had it in his fist. He nodded to Lumi, thankful for the assistance, and he kicked his way back towards the jetty.
I don't know what happened. It just slipped off. Oh, Pietro, forgive me.
Signora! Signora, I found your ring.
Oh, my ring? Oh, grazie! Cola, you wonderful boy. You really are a fish, aren't you? Cola, il pesce.
Okay.
The signora made a show of pinching and kissing Cola's cheeks. Cola doffed his cap and nodded sheepishly. And Cola, feeling a bit like a hero, stretched out onto his back and surrendered to the bliss of the cool surf. The waves cradled him away from the waterfront, and he closed his eyes as the Mediterranean sun warmed his face under a peerless blue sky. But then, the bustling port fell quiet. The strait began to tremble. Dread rippled throughout Messina as every citizen looked to the sea. Cola's fish friends shook in place, their faces awash with terror, when suddenly all of the water was stolen away. Every last drop receding into the horizon. Nicola fell to the seabed with nothing but mud and rock beneath him. Lumiuni and the fish were mired all about him, their gills flapping desperately. Every vessel in harbor dropped to the bottom of the sea in a crumbling heap. Church bells rang the alarm. People in the port screamed and ran further inland.
What? What? What is going on?
Then he saw it. Off in the distance. A wall of water that stretched so high that for a moment it eclipsed the sun. A tidal wave. The biggest Nicola had ever seen or heard of. He turned to run with the rest of the sailors when he saw his father's boat in the wreckage. And, ensnared in the netting nearby, his father. The tidal wave rose behind his papa, swelling with all its terrible fury. Cola was too far. He could not reach him in time. But still they reached for one another.
Papa! Cola!
Cola descended into a cemetery. countless tragedies flowed past him. A gold wedding band sank slowly through the water. He pushed away a terrible thought. He searched among the debris. Finally, Nicola saw his father, floating peacefully against the fathomless blue. Gola seized him round the waist and, praying with every stroke, he swam as fast as he could towards the surface.
Papa? Papa?
But his papa did not answer.
Mama.
Your papa's net.
I'm so sorry. I tried. I really tried.
Allo, pesciolino mio. It's okay. It's okay.
No. No, it's not okay. He's gone. It's my fault.
What do you mean it's your fault?
I wasn't there. I wasn't with him. I had his knife. I could have cut him free. If I had just been a fisherman, he could still be here.
Don't you dare, pesciolino mio. He was so proud of you. You are his son. It would break his heart if you'd been anything other than what you are. None of this is your fault. Do you hear me? Do you hear me, Nicola?
I hear you, Mama.
Oh, come here, figlio mio, sweet boy. It's okay. Shh. Everything will be okay.
Nicola's mother hugged her son hard. It was fitting that Cola's uncle was the quiet one, because there was nothing to be said when he learned of his younger brother's passing. Cola had never seen his uncle cry before. Zio folded the netting of Messina's finest rice with great ceremony and hung it on the kitchen wall.